What's up, guys? You're listening to The Breeze Podcast with me, Victor White, and...
It's your boy, John O'Collin. What's good? What's good?
Your word of mouth is our oxygen, and we're suffocating right now, right, John? We need them to talk a little bit more.
We're dying here, fam. You gotta give us some oxygen, for real, for real.
Yeah. I mean, if you could take a guess, whom of us have extensive knowledge with music and production and audio recording, you'd obviously guess me, since one of us is sitting in Mount Echo.
I got a new room. I'm in my new room, so this is actually the studio.
Okay.
So you'll see this space transform over the next couple of minutes.
I think you have to work on the echo in the studio. But
I'm just getting a new microphone, so
well, listeners, let's just get into it.
Breeze. Bro.
Yeah.
I see you've been busy, man. Busy this week, so what's good,
So I've managed to be sick this week. I managed to get hand-ins done and study for first midterm tomorrow. One more. Yeah, it's just it's crazy. It's a lot. But it's fun.
Same midterm you talked about last week.
Yeah. I think so. And I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to find time for everything. So, but you know, you do what you can. You do what you can, you know. I don't know. Honestly, bro, I wake up early and then it's hard work all days. It's mostly... this week, it's been a lot of studying going on, so that's it. And then you just trying to survive, I guess. I have a vlog, so then you got to shoot the vlog and do that stuff. Luckily, I have enthusiastic classmates that want to be part of that, so makes my job a little bit easier. I could just focus on my academic career. But That's it, bro. Tell me, you've probably had a more fun week than me.
I would say fun. I'd say this week was a lot of work. Me and the team, we launched our product, Shuri.
I saw that. It looks really good.
Yeah, respect, bro. So basically, now we can talk about it, huh? So Shuri is a one-stop resource for all creators in the music industry.
Yeah.
So one thing I found out is there's not a lot of information out there with regards to what's the master, what is exclusive versus non-exclusive, right? Yeah. How to navigate that type of stuff. You know what I mean? So we just created it. So we got a bunch of experts. We just scoured the web looking for what's the right information, you know what I mean? That mixed with getting some experts and me answering some questions. People come on the website, ask questions. So this is the first product and ecosystem of products that we're about to create. So
nice.
It's super exciting. So we got a lot of traction in terms of interest from other companies and stuff. So we dropped in Monday.
Yeah.
Monday night, get a text from this person from one of the biggest companies in the world, video production companies.
Nice.
You probably know about. It's set a meeting up. So Tuesday we met with them. Crazy meeting. I know we're just reaching out. We're trying to build some partnerships with some key people right now.
Yeah.
And launch our next product. You know what I mean? Because it's just free. Free for users. We charge them. For us, it was more accessibility to that information. You know what I mean? Especially back when we're videos.
Yeah.
If you charge them, that's a big barrier to entry for all those people. But as we go on, we'll add more features. And those will be paid features. It's a trade-off. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
just been working on that.
Well, I guess, like, because the thing that I was thinking about, you know, like, let's just dive into Chopped Up now. Boom, roll the intro.
Okay, wait.
Because I, are you guys behind Kanye releasing all his contracts on Twitter?
Bro, I'm gonna say this, right? That is like the blessing from Jesus. We launch on Monday, Kanye wasn't losing around on Wednesday. Sparks is like entire movement of having the information, knowing exactly what you're getting yourself into.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So like, man's put all his contracts on the on Twitter, bro. Like, he took the time to screenshot every single page.
So what do you think about that?
He said a lot of stuff that made sense. You know what I mean? Like, Kanye's a billionaire, right?
Yeah.
So he's in a position where he can now be like, okay, I want my masters. You know what I mean? Like, give me, like, let me pay for them. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know if you saw the text with his lawyer.
Yeah, the three strategies.
Yeah, yeah. So $300 million, like, Taylor Swift, masters got $300 million, right? I don't think she got them. Scooter Braun has them. She had to go record all her music again. So the problem with masters is that when you sign that contract with the other thing, unless you can pay for them or you get the opportunity to pay for them and get them back, they don't belong to you. You know what I mean? So, like,
so John, what is a master for us who don't know music industry?
Master is just, that's like the right to reproduce, distribute the music. You know what I mean? So like, when Kanye, my dark twisted fantasy, he recorded that under a contract, right?
Yeah.
So he didn't have the rights to reproduce it. He didn't have the rights to distribute it to the world. You know what I mean? Okay. So as an independent artist now, that's different. So if you look at someone like Chance the Rapper, he's not signed to anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could sell his music, he could do anything he wants to do, he could record it and make it something else, you know what I mean? But being under a major label contract, you don't have that privilege because that's one of the things you sign away. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That holds the most value. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So
okay.
Kanye West is, I think he could afford to get his masters back, but as long as, like, yo, does the label want to sell them? You know?
Yeah,
that's the other side of the coin right there. But
yeah,
I also saw he tweeted, I love talking about, like, master rights and just people that are in that space. So there's this guy named Merck, and he owns Hypnosis Sound Fund. So this is, like, super interesting fund. And what they do is that they acquire, like, sound catalogs. They treat catalogs as assets. So they value them as assets.
Yeah.
And they're trading on the London Stock Exchange.
Okay.
I saw a Kanye tweet out. He was like, "Yeah, the only man that has your back is Merck, right? Which is the guy that owns this company, right?
Yeah.
Problem is, if, like, Merck is in the business of acquiring masters, he's in the business. So if you were Merck, he's gonna buy your masters, from you. He's gonna probably buy them from Universal and be like, okay, yo, I got them here, like, okay, we're good. And then, I mean, they're not gonna put the label. They'll be with Merck, but, like."
Yeah,
it's still not with Kanye, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you still gotta sell it off anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, you see, like, a lot of songwriters, a lot of producers selling their masters to Merck, by themselves out of the contract that they're in, so they can now, like, create freely. So it's an interesting space, man. Like,
okay, so if I get this correctly, so let's say, Victorious White, the rapper, signs a deal with Universal Music. So the upside of the deal is that they have tons of channels, probably touring and resources to get me going, and probably, like, some of the best songwriters in the world or stuff like that, as an example, beat makers, whatever. But the downside is that they will then own everything that I produce.
Yeah.
Okay. So for how long will they own this?
Indefinitely.
Indefinitely.
Yeah.
Okay. So and then there's a profit split of the money that comes in from that, or?
Yeah, 100%. Like a lot of people sign 360 deals, meaning that you get like the label takes a percentage of every single thing you do in on this earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
That's from music, that's from touring, that's from merch, that's from like anything you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Back to that point that you made, like the problem with the major label system is that they do that a lot. They do that a lot with like young talent. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
When people see money, like they'll, it's like, okay, yo, I'll take the money and do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah.
Depending on the type of artist you are, like if you have the leverage, it's like, yo, you could negotiate. A lot of people don't know what like standard contract be looking like. You know what I mean?
So yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, we're just in the business of educating these people, man, so you don't get taken advantage of, because like the whole thing about the record industry is that they use misinformation to take advantage of the young people coming up. So
okay,
we're trying to change that. You know what I mean?
Okay, so Kanye, back to him, he's now fighting a legal battle to get his masters back by himself. Yeah. So what happens when he owns his masters?
Nothing happens. He probably gets more money. And then when he dies, it'll go into his family. You know what I mean? Like it's like a copyright, it's like a right to use that. So the label wouldn't have that right. You know what I mean? Like whenever someone wants to play his music in an ad, mm-hmm. or like say it's like Super Bowl commercial.
Okay.
Like they have to contact
mm-hmm.
his family, you know what I mean? Not mm-hmm. the label. So that's okay. Like the biggest shift of power right there. You know what I mean?
Okay.
They're super interested. Like he didn't say anything out of this world. You know what I mean? Like you saw like a bunch of other like top producers like come out and be like, yo, I'm still in the deal right now, haven't made X amount of money, you know what I mean? Like, but then when you look at the system that they're in, it's like, yo, these people are these executives in this industry like strive on just they just get these young talent that just, you know, young talent, yeah. Young and stupid people talent that they're talented, but like they maybe not be as educated in like the business
side. Yeah, I mean, to me it looks like these labels are these machines essentially.
Yeah, I mean it's just like a normal company, bro. You know what I mean? Like when you look at it, like they just want one thing, and that's the profit of the top.
Yeah, exactly.
But like there's been a shift in major label systems mm-hmm. having all the power to like moving towards more independent artists. So you have people like Russ, you like Chance the Rapper, like
mm-hmm.
This is a platform called United Masters that you can
upload
your thing on and you own the masters. You know what I mean? You own your masters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of good things on the horizon when it comes to artists and mm-hmm. own their masters and stuff, but Kanye was super early in the game, man. Like that time it was like everyone, I mean, what's interesting, it'll be interesting to look at what good music contracts look like, you know what I mean, to see like so good music if Kanye was a label. I would love to see what type of contracts like Pusha T has, you know what I mean, like see if I mean, if he's doing it to his own people, that's interesting, you know?
So, let me ask you the next question, John, because now, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say and stuff like that, but you have a songwriting career, right?
Yeah.
And you've been in talks with various entities. So, what's your personal, like, you know, how do you approach this? What's your personal approach?
My personal approach is I try to create leverage. You know what I mean? Because that's the only way you can actually have a conversation at the table. You know what I mean? Like when you approach or get approached by these people, like they see you and it's like, yo, okay, this guy's talented or this guy knows what's happening in music. But like, is he knowledgeable about publishing? Does he know about this type of contract? So first step is to make myself knowledgeable in these things, right?
Yeah.
But then also just be smart. Just be smart, like business wise. Like you wouldn't sign a contract and take like a humongous advance, and then you can't like. Okay, so perfect example with the advance, right?
Yeah.
Tons of people take hundreds of thousands of dollars up to millions of dollars in advances. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you sign up, when you get sign a record publishing deal, a record deal, whatever, you get an advance. Yeah. That's all the money you're going to seek until you made that amount of money. You know what I mean? So if you get $500,000 advance, you have to make $500,000.
But what happens if you don't make it?
You're under that contract for life, bro. Like, until you made that buy. You know what I mean?
That's crazy. So why would someone want to take an advance though?
Yo, when you look at the people in the industry, when you look at like, when you like the labels and these companies, they prey on these like young, like a lot of the stories I've heard, like these people are just really like down to their last dollar, like all they do is music.
Yeah.
All they do is music. You know what I mean? So when they do it, you don't make a lot of money if you just do music, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking and you only doing music and you're not signed and you don't have any placements and you're down to your, like, your last dollar. And then the company comes in and is like, yo, I have X more dollars for you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, holy, it's $500,000.
Yeah.
So you have a dollar in your bank. Yeah. You see,
and then you're like, okay, I'll sign. Like,
yeah, exactly. Okay. But then like, even with like $1 million advance, you look at a lot of the artists, you think, okay, $1 million advance, that's a lot of money, right? Then you got taxes to pay, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to pay your manager 20%. You know what I mean? Got to pay the lawyer. Got to pay all the other fees.
Yeah.
Then you realize you got $350,000.
Yeah.
But you have to recoup $1 million. You took $1 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Whoa.
You're not recouping $350,000.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's an interesting space to be in. And
that's really interesting. So my last question then is, do you think Kanye West will succeed in getting Taylor
Swift? I think if he's a Merc, he'll get it.
Okay.
Merc is like the Elon Musk of the music industry.
Okay, interesting.
That's like the comparison that I draw. You know what I mean? Like, he has the money. If you get a minute, just like, you can Google Hypnosis Sound Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's actually a stock that you should look at too, because that asset is just always increasing. But just take a look at that. You'll see exactly what they're doing now. But actually, have like a super interesting strategy. It's about like how they value songs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'll definitely get it if he's working with those people for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Jonathan. Next subject in Chopped Up, right? Our boy, the Prince of SPAX, Chamath Palihapitiya, has launched two new SPACs after going public with one. Did we talk about that last week? No, we didn't.
I don't think we talked about it last week.
Maybe he broke this week. I think he broke this week. But I don't remember, but it's a real estate, like, sell your home within, like, 48 hours thing.
Really?
Yeah, in the US, that he bought for $2 billion or something like that with his SPAC, and then he launched two other SPACs. But it got me thinking. So a quick recap. A SPAC is a special purpose acquisition company, which is essentially a blank check company. So you put it on the stock market, you get people to invest in it, it's a big cash pool, and then you merge with a startup or another company, and it's a faster way out into the public markets to be publicly traded as a company, right? So what Shamath is talking about is that the fact that there, in just a few years, we've gone from having 8,000 publicly traded companies down to 4,000, right? So there's a huge, what's not surplus, but the other way. There's a huge shortage of publicly traded companies that to be invested in, right? Because you only have so many options today.
Right.
So I think that's why he's at the moment, why he's so heavily into SPACs, you know, because you can just take a company public in like 6 weeks instead of, what, 4 to 8 months that if you're doing an IPO and pricing and uncertainties and etc. And this got me thinking, right? Because the person that has stuck in my head is Robert F. Smith, Vista Equity Partners Ventures, right? The richest Afro-American in
the guy that paid for all those people's like college.
Yes, yes, exactly. And that guy, what he has done with Vista is that they buy tech companies that fit a certain model. Mm-hmm. And then they have this list, like, what is it, Vista, Perfect, blah, 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 blah. So they churn it through this machine, right? And then they come out the other side, like they usually go from like being 20% profitable to being 50% mm-hmm. profitable, right? However, he has not sold off any companies. And usually what you do in private equity is that you buy a company, you turn it around, and then you sell it off at a huge profit, right? But for some reason, he hasn't sold any companies. I don't know why. I haven't read too much into it. So now I'm thinking, when we have this SPAC tool, and we have, you know, private equity, right? Turning around companies. I feel like those two would marry each other perfectly. Mm-hmm. Right. So imagine like you're working with acquiring companies that you turn around in like 3-4 years, and then you do a SPAC with that company, you know, and just list it, boom, sell it off. I don't know. I feel like, because do you want to know why I'm thinking of this, John?
Yeah, totally.
Because as I'm in business school, like obviously I'm like contemplating, you know, consultancy, like management consultancy, but I'm also like, you know, contemplating being an M&A banker as an example, you know, working on mergers and acquisitions. And so what you have on the one side with the consultancy is like, it's a better lifestyle because you're usually off on the weekends. And you work with these teams, the C-suite essentially, to implement strategies, I would say. But then you're out. Whereas as an M&A, you're working as an advisor, you know, to the C-suite, to the top team, long-term strategic stuff for different various companies, right? So, and you stick around for the change and all these things. So it's like those two conflicting things, as well as, you know, the fact that like if you're an M&A banker, you become a machine as a consultant. But like as a consultant, like it's a good way into business school, like MBA at like a top tier, you know, thing. Whereas as a banker, like that's a good thing too. But then you also have other doors and, you know, you make a little bit more money. So that's why I'm thinking about these things as I'm diving deeper into the world of, I guess, finance.
I got you. Yo, so remember I told you, like, yo, when you go to business school, they're like they're two career paths you would like to take, and there's those two exact things.
Yeah.
So my question again, I asked you this question earlier when you started the program.
Yeah.
Now you've had some like info sessions and like some companies have come and talk to you guys.
Yeah.
Like, what's the sentiment in terms of like what are your classmates looking at doing?
I know. I have one friend, he wants to be a banker. He fits the banking model perfectly. But a lot, I think, I think that's because this is Sweden. Like, a lot of them don't really know what they want to do, you know. They're like, yo, it's a good school. I mean, here, you know. Like, it's a surprisingly stunning amount of people that kind of have no idea what they want to do, which is crazy to me when you go to this school. And Which is, yeah, but I mean, then again, like, a majority of people don't know what they want to do when they're at a young age. So, you know, it's not too crazy. But the thing is, you know, and then, like, on the other side, like, you also have, but the thing, listen, this is what makes the most sense in my mind. Like, whether you become a M&A banker or if you are a, you know, consultant at, like, BCG, Bain, or McKinsey, you know, you get into these insane networks. And that's where a lot of the value is, right? So yeah. I think like, so then to me, it's like, okay, Victor, but will you be wasting time doing something like that when you could be doing your passion projects or building something yourself? But then I'm like, okay, but we have a lot of time. Do you get what I mean?
If you look at it, like, for me, consulting, like, made sense just because, like, when you start, then when you actually do start your passion projects, like, you know, you understand the business, like, you've seen, like, all the mistakes that all these other companies made, like, you know, is that, like, that's, that, what do you think their like, exit stats are so amazing? You learn business at, like, such a high level. It's like, okay, no, you can go, like, go do your thing now. So they have the whole up and down model. It's like, go, like, come in, do your 2-year sentence, either leave or come back, you know what I mean?
So then I think, because I think, like, in my mind, like, right now, my dream world is leaning towards private equity, because I feel like you get the best of all worlds. Like, you get finance and you get, like, you know, turning around companies, which I think is probably super fun, you know? And, you know, it's highly profitable. It pays really well. But then again, like, I don't know, like, I need to taste these things, try these things out, you know?
Yeah, we're going to the next couple of years to, like, try them out and then make a decision, you know what I mean? Then even then, like, you could still, like, be like, I'm probably going to switch over to this.
But the thing that hit me too, John, is that, like, if because the thing is, like, in Sweden and in Europe, you're able to go into, like, you know, these consultancy firms without having, like, a master's, which you need in North America usually for them to hire you. I think we touched a little bit upon this earlier. So, which means that, and they're also the best pathway into a business MBA. And from a business MBA, you can easily go into finance or whatever you want from there. Do you get what I mean? So then it's like, okay, so then you get 2 years of consultancy, top tier MBA, and then you can go into finance, hedge fund, whatever. Like, do you get what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, just touching on that point, like, with the comparison to North America, I guess, like, these companies are the same, they're global companies, right? So you could get in with a bachelor's in North America, but, like, you, just like in Sweden, you won't be a consultant, you'll be a business analyst, right? So, talking McKinsey, I'm not too sure about that. Like, BCG and those guys, but you won't be a your title won't be consultant. So, like, you'll come in under the consultants. You work for your 2 years, then you go to business school. If you go to business school, come back, then you're consultant.
No, but but because I was talking to a friend and he did a internship program at BCG, and he said that one person there, because they said that it's really rare, like in Sweden, where it's so, like, where they take a lot of bachelors in to work at analysts or whatever, and then they work for 2 years, but they're not consultants. Meanwhile, in North America, you know, these master students come in to being consultants and being the boss of these people that have been working for 2 years, but they don't know anything.
If you have a master's, MBA, master's, anything, like, you'll come in as a consultant. You know what I mean? Like, if you go in as a bachelor, you come in as an analyst or analyst, but, like, that tends to happen. Like, what I find is that, like, these consulting companies have, like, a strict, like, development model, like in terms of like career development model.
Yeah.
So that you know exactly where you're gonna be and what you're gonna do, exactly when you're in that firm. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, like okay, if I stay longer, I'll be an engagement manager. If I stay a little longer, I'll be like a partner. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's the good thing about it. But like to your point, like you'll have like people that have been that come in at positions hiring you, been there for like 2 months, like they're your boss. But
yeah,
that's the game, you know.
And then I want to ask you, like, on the serious side of things, how do you guys in, and now I'm talking about you and your relationship, like, how do you guys talk about, like, work and, like, life arrangements, do you get what I mean? Because, like, you know, I know that the type of works that I'm gonna do like after school are gonna be like, it's gonna be like 80-hour weeks, you know, and whatever I want to do is gonna be like a lot of work, but then you also have to maintain a relationship and stuff.
Yo, so, I think the simplest way to answer that question is like what do you want to do? Like I feel like understanding what both parties want to do is important, because like you don't start a career, you don't know, like, or you don't understand exactly what's happening, then you get lost in that shit. But like I feel like that communication is super important. But I tell you, like, what my parents always would tell me, like back in the day when we didn't have these cell phones and stuff
like that,
you had to like walk to go to like a payphone, pay like 20 US dollars to talk for like 2 minutes on the phone, right?
Yeah.
But like I feel like the world is like the world that I know I'm gonna be in, like that we're gonna be in, like it just makes sense for us to do exactly what we want to do. You know what I mean? Like we're like I feel like you can't be restrictive at this point in life.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, bro, you can pick the phone up and you can talk to like your granddad somewhere, you know what I mean? Like wherever they are. It's like I don't see it being a problem, but like I feel like
what I mean is like, you know, if your girlfriend might work as one thing, and then like, okay, so let's take my relationship as an example. Mm-hmm. So my girlfriend's gonna become a dentist, right? And before she owns and runs her own practice, as you know, when she actually works as a dentist, she could be working like 4 days a week and making the same amount of money as I'm gonna be making working 80 hours a week. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. So I'm just talking about that balance, like, and like how.
I mean, like, does it matter? Does it matter?
Well, in a way, I think it matters, because the person that works less is then going to be responsible for some aspects, like, you know, I don't know, making, just an example, dinner or cleaning, or do you get what I mean? For a period of time when that ratio is like that. So
I'd say like, yo, at a certain point, if you're both like professionals, that shit don't matter.
Yeah.
It's like, you got enough money that you could, like, what are household chores at that point? Like, if your household income is like $250,000.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, you're not out here cooking your own meals, bro. Like, it's like, I mean, you're both, like, at this point, I feel like you both have to be like working on that career, you know what I mean? Like that's what you have to be doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, in terms of the household
because to me, like, it's okay to sacrifice at the younger age.
100%.
And then because then when you get kids, like, you know, you can be in the position to win and like be more passive. Do you get what I mean? And I also have the idea, I don't remember who said it, but like, yeah, it was Casey Neistat who started vlogging again. Shout out Casey Neistat. And also shout out my stepdad and stepmom, Carlos and Caroline. They listen to all our podcasts, so shout out. But he said that it's kind of nice, like, if you are financially lucky or whatever and you make it or whatever, like, you can take a year here and there throughout your life instead of waiting until you're 65 or whatever. Do you get what I mean? I really like that idea, you know.
I think like the way I'm looking at life right now is that I take it in phases, you know what I mean? So like for me, like this phase right now, like I have to work like way harder than all of my peers so that I can come back and be in a phase where I can relax when other people are like still in their 9 to 5 and they're doing
smart.
That.
You know, that's so smart. Like, that's so smart.
Yeah, I feel like that's what you have to do. You know what I mean? Like for me, like pull yourself out of the environment that's comfortable to you and just put your head down and just work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So like even like I probably wouldn't be able to do this project in 4 weeks if I was like in Toronto. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it probably wouldn't happen. Someone probably hit me and be like, yo, be let's go somewhere. Like so I feel like you have phases in your life.
Yeah.
But if you treat your phases like as they are supposed to be treated, not like the traditional way, but like you can be smarter in this time, we're way smarter, but harder as well. And I feel like you'll be in a way better position. I know so many people that have told me this that I want, like, if I don't listen to this advice, it'd be like the dumbest thing ever. If I don't
listen.
Just like, I mean, for me right now in this phase, it's like, yo, work, just work, put your head down and work.
Yeah.
And then I'll be privileged in a couple of years. Way before if I took the traditional route. If I took the traditional route, I know like I'd know like at 60 years old I can retire. You know what I mean? But like that's not the route that I feel like life should be on. You know what I mean? I don't think that's how you should live life. So that's basically it.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I just find it because the thing with me is like when I find what I'm passionate about and what I love, you know, it's easy to get blinded, you know, it's just easy to get blinded. So I think, and that's actually something that I find a lot of joy in being in a relationship. It's like, you know, you have someone else with a different perspective that reminds you of things that like, because let's be honest, bro, like I've been a machine, like, you know, throughout most of my life, like
you're
fortunate if you're an athlete and you're able to travel the world. Yeah, sure, you're fortunate, but it's not like a pleasant lifestyle. Like, because you're literally working your ass off all the time. And I don't know, bro. We'll see what happens.
Let's wrap it up. I don't have an exam to work.
Yeah, I have an exam to work towards. So, guys, thank you for listening. And as always, your word of mouth is our oxygen.
Don't forget.
We love you. Okay, peace.
Peace.